Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Market Bites. I'm Sam.
And I'm Josh.
And we're here to break down three of the hottest financial events that happened this week, so you can keep your finger on the pulse on your way to work, at the gym, wherever and whenever you have time to get updated.
Please remember that this podcast is intended for educational and informational purposes only. Stay tuned for additional disclosures at the end of today's episode.
So, are you ready?
Here we go.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of Market Bites brought to you by eToro, and I'm joined by Neja Mulk and Josh Gilbert. Neja, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. We had snow yesterday, which is really uncommon for April, but overall it's been good.
Good stuff. We've had rain, we've had wind, we've had sun all in the last 24 hours in the UK. For anyone living in London, you've been aware of all of that. However, I've seen all the pictures and videos from Dubai, Josh, and I know we were speaking just before we came online. It sounds a bit crazy there, but before we talk about Dubai and all this fake rain, real rain, flooding, how's the weather in Australia?
It's actually not too bad still, even though we're kind of out of summer now. But it was a bit murky today, but I have a jumper on. So that's a good sign that it's maybe getting a little bit colder here. So, not flooding like Dubai or raining still yet. So good.
Yeah. Are all those flooding videos, are they bearish for the market? Is it bullish? You've got all the crypto gang over there at the moment. And I wonder if this is a bullish or bearish sign. Has anyone got any opinion on that?
Maybe we should ask the audience to comment on that.
Yeah, right. Let us know what you think. Is it going to flush away the market?
Let us know in the chat. Is this ominous or not exactly? Yeah. Let us know in the chat below. Do remember to like, share, subscribe. All of that does help. And if you're listening on a podcast where you can give a rating, please do that as well. Today, other than the flooding, we're going to discuss higher for longer rates. Earnings season is really starting to pick up again now. So we'll talk about Netflix as our earnings of choice. And we'll also talk about market pullbacks. How does that sound, Josh? You're going to be up first. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so going with that sort of higher for longer narrative in terms of what it means, why we're now hearing it from central bankers. So I think it's good to, get an idea of what it means, why we're getting it specifically now, as well. And, has the market been anticipating, or is this something that's just sort of been sort of sprung upon us as well? And, maybe a better understanding of sometimes what does higher for longer actually mean, because it's thrown around quite a bit. So just a bit of an understanding of what it means for investors.
Nice. And Neja?
I will focus on Netflix earnings. As you know, earnings season is officially in a full swing, and Netflix is just one of the big names that is reporting this week. They will release their first quarter earnings results on Thursday after market closes. And so far, their stock actually saw a significant upswing in 2024. It is up about 30% year to date. And last earnings report was quite a positive surprise for the market. So I think the question now is, can this upside momentum continue, and how hard it will be to satisfy the market this time? So I will focus on that.
Interesting. Was the full swing reference a pun that was intended or not? Because the full swing is the golf program on Netflix where they follow around all the professional golfers. Was it intended, or was it just pure luck?
It was just a pure luck, to be honest, but I would love to say that it was intended.
Yeah, I heard that and I was like, that's amazing. And then I was like, hang on, am I making this up? And I just quickly Googled and I was correct. But a good program, by the way, if anyone needs anything to watch and is a sport fan. My subject today, I've gone for market pullbacks. I think remaining calm is key, having a plan and sticking to it. I think back to the beginning of my investing journey, and some of the biggest regrets I had come from being unplanned, making decisions where I had no process, and the market moves lower and you ultimately make a decision you're not prepared for. So hopefully I can calm some people's nerves, put some things in perspective, and help people plan for decisions like this. Josh, then, the dreaded higher for longer narrative was handed down by Jerome Powell last night. What does this mean? And importantly, what does it mean for markets?
Yeah, so he did. Yeah, he did sort of give that that comment to markets that we didn't want to hear, which was that sort of higher for longer. But I think markets had already sort of braced for it. Really, we've obviously had a pretty poor start to the S&P 500 this week, and we've only just sort of really said in recent weeks, you know, how well the S&P 500, you know, had been sort of performing up until this sort of time, and essentially it's come from this idea that, you know, the Fed aren't going to be cutting interest rates with US data sort of not moving in the direction that they would have hoped just recently. The US economy has remained pretty resilient, and that was sort of really, you know, shown again when we had sort of retail sales data handed down. Consumers picking up their spending in March, headline retail sales grew by 0.7%, higher than 0.2% that was expected. There was a big spending at online retailers, which sort of really drove the headline print, along with gasoline prices as well. But that, alongside a number of higher than expected inflation prints, again, that we've covered in sort of recent week, after the good progress that we had on inflation last year, on top of, again, that resilient economy, strong GDP growth, has sort of left the Fed feeling less confident that they can now cut rates and then still sort of reach that 2% inflation target that they're feeling they sort of want to get to. So again, they want to see more confidence that inflation is going to get back to that number before they sort of start cutting rates. And that's why we've had Jerome Powell sort of say those words, that higher for longer. We're going to keep rates elevated until we get clearer evidence that inflation is sort of moving in the right direction, and we're ultimately getting better data in other areas as well. But importantly, it does have ramifications for the rest of the world, because when the US sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold, as we've said a couple of times on the podcast in the past. And that is very well seen already. If we look at Australia, markets are expecting just a 70% chance that we get one rate cut in 2024. And that's a big, big change from where we've been recently. That has continued to be dialed back, and we had a lot less rate cuts expected this year. But essentially, markets telling us that they don't see a rate cut in Australia this year, which is, again, a big, big change. And now to add to that, markets now don't see the Fed cutting until September as well. So a big, big shift in rate expectations from what we've seen, you know, over recent months. And if we go back to the start of the year, markets expecting 4, 5, 6 rate cuts from the Fed. That seems a very, very long way away now. And I think to make sense of all of that, I think investors will now need to come to terms with the fact that rates globally are staying higher for longer, and that essentially they aren't going to be in a rush to cut interest rates, because the data that we are continuing to get from global economies shows that ultimately we need to keep rates higher to bring down inflation and to cool economies that continue to sort of show resilience. And what that does is that does change the investment landscape, pretty smallly, but it does change it. And I think that's quite significant.
You mentioned that higher for longer narrative changes the investment landscape. How did markets react to this news? Were they anticipating that? And how does this change how investors position themselves in 2024?
Yeah, so after we got the retail sales print, essentially it was a pretty poor day on markets. So the higher for longer narrative, comes, following what markets had expected. Jerome Powell essentially gave us what, markets had already anticipated, but it comes amid other bad news, which is essentially creating this perfect storm. You've got these geopolitical tensions obviously rising that we've seen in the Middle East from Russia and from Ukraine. That's seen the USD rally. We've had the VIX rebound to sort of long-term averages as well. And then we also had data yesterday showing that China's economy remains pretty sluggish, that they beat on GDP, but industrial production and retail sales disappointed, showing that we probably need some more stimulus there. And that put global markets on the back foot. And we mentioned it a few times, but we were overdue a pullback. And Sam, you mentioned it a moment ago about pullbacks, and we'll get onto that in a moment. But we've got one. We've got that pullback. And ultimately, you know, we've seen the S&P 500 rally in the first quarter, it was because of the view that earnings growth was, you know, going to be double digits, and that we were going to get sort of 4 to 5 rate cuts. And we are slowly seeing those rate cut expectations fade. And I think that puts a big weight now onto earnings season. And that, you know, obviously moves into full flow this week, and then obviously into next week as well, when we've got obviously those big names, your Teslas, your Microsoft, your Alphabets, etc. And you know, those names, you know, are really going to need to justify their valuations as well. And obviously, you know, Neza will get on to Netflix in a moment. But on the other side of that, this also does push back that rotation that we've been talking about into those cheaper rate sensitive sectors, such as your financials and real estate. We've had a big move from those sectors already on this anticipation that we're going to get those rate cuts. And I think the closer we get to rate cuts, we'll see those, you know, sectors start to move once again. But I think it will sort of hold back that rotation until we, you know, get closer to that rate cut, especially given that we're being so pushed back later in the year. And I think it will delay, you know, the move out of stocks such as the Magnificent Seven, given how well they've performed recently, and especially if they do well this earnings season as well. They continue to provide that sort of defensive positioning for investors. They've got healthy earnings growth. They've got good margins. You know, they can keep delivering for investors. And as I say, we'll see that next week. But we might also see cash coming into equities from this sell-off as well, because we've got a lot of cash on the sidelines that might provide some support. And we have seen S&P 500 sell-offs bought through the year. If we've had a dip of maybe 1% or more, we've seen that sort of bought up, and then the S&P 500 has rallied on the next day. So I do think that, you know, there is some sort of technical levels to sort of keep an eye on there as well, especially from a buying perspective as well. So although that the narrative is higher for longer, I think that is expected given the data that we've been given. And I don't think that investors should be massively surprised. It was, you know, really just a matter of time, I think, that we actually had those words muttered by Jerome Powell. So I don't think there should be any real reason for investors to be overly worried. We are still positive on markets this year. It might just take a little bit longer for that rotation to come to sort of full fruition. And as I say, putting a slightly bigger weight on earnings season over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, big couple of weeks coming up. I mean, this one, you've got 8.9% of the S&P 500 by market cap reporting. Next week, 42.5%. The week after, 25%. 44 companies reporting this week from the S&P 500, 166 next week, and 169 the week after. One of the companies that is reporting this week is Netflix. If we go back 2 years ago, in quarter one of 2022, Netflix negatively surprised the market with subscribers decline, and the stock dropped more than 30% in 1 day. How are the high expectations this time, and what do you think the market is going to focus on, Neza?
So, expectations from Netflix are high. If we take a look just at those basic numbers, analysts are expecting Netflix to report earnings per share of about $4.5 on revenue of $9.3 billion. So expectations are remaining high. However, even if they manage to meet or even surpass those expectations, I think that markets will also focus on guidance and few metrics that are really important for their business. If we talk about them just a little bit, I think that subscribers growth will likely to be one of the primarily focus for the market. I found an interesting statistics, actually. In 2022, it is estimated that over 40% of all Netflix users access the content without paying. That means that they were using other passwords or accounts of other people. And Netflix responded to that in the last year. They actually banned sharing passwords outside the households. And that had a positive impact for them. In December last year, they marked the largest quarterly jump in subscriptions since 2020. That's why I really look forward to seeing if this boost continued to the first quarter or it is normalizing by now. And I think that market will be really interested in that number. Secondly, there's a focus on Netflix advertising supported subscriptions and also on the ratio between advertising subscriptions and ad-free subscriptions. What's the deal about that? Over a year ago, Netflix introduced a new, cheaper version of subscription that includes ads. And since it was introduced, it has performed pretty well. In the last earnings report, it had more than 23 million global active users. So that's quite good. Even though advertising isn't currently Netflix's main driver of revenue, the company is really committed to scaling up this revenue stream on the long term. That's why I think that market will also really closely watch this number. The last thing I will focus on are sports contracts. I think that can be a huge deal for Netflix if there are any specific news regarding that. For example, we have NBA contract. Their current deal is up for renewal next year. And right now they're moving out of this exclusive negotiating window. That's why Netflix is also one of the potential candidates, and any of news about new contracts would be a really positive news for Netflix investors and for their stock price. Overall, I think that those areas are key to watch, and if there's any good or bad news in any of them, I think that we could see a significant impact on their share price.
Yeah, and I think if we look back at sort of Netflix's earnings over the last sort of couple of years, it has always sort of dealt a number of surprises. It's always been a really interesting name to sort of focus on, especially because it comes slightly earlier than some of those other names. And obviously, if we think back to, as we say, you know, 2022, 2021, and some of those big misses that we had on subscriber numbers, the declining numbers that we had as well in sort of 2022, just showed how much of a difficult period they went through, but again, shows how good the business is to sort of get them back on track and having a great start to this year. Neza, what do you see as some of the potential risks going in, given that, you know, if we look back to 2022, that they didn't fare sort of too well, streaming competition is pretty high, and we also have, you know, a pretty tough macro environment as well that could, you know, potentially impact Netflix's performance in the near term as well?
Yeah, there are a few challenges they will have to face on the long term, and they can be solved with one earnings report. I think that firstly, we have this market saturation in mature regions that could limit their new subscribers growth. Additionally, we can already see how saturated is streaming industry. Besides Netflix, we have Disney Plus, Amazon Prime Video, and HBO Max, and those are just a few of the big names. So that is the issue or challenge they will be facing. Another challenge is capacity to create premium content. Successful series and films are contributing to expanding and maintaining their subscribers base, and they are actually strengthening their market position. But this is a double-edged sword, actually, because cost of production and acquiring this content continues to rise. So it will be crucial for Netflix on this long term to carefully manage these costs and at the same time maintain commitment to delivering high quality content, so they will get more subscribers and maintain those on the platform. I think that no matter what will reaction be on Thursday after market, addressing all of those challenges, also macroeconomic conditions, as you mentioned, will be crucial for them, for their success, and for maintaining their position in streaming industry.
I guess the big question is now is, you know, how many streaming services do people have? Neza, how many have you got?
I actually got only Netflix.
Yeah, so okay, Sam?
I use this one, but
that comes out my own pocket is Netflix, but I've got access.
So you're a bit naughty, are you?
Well, you can share Amazon, I think. So I've got Amazon. You can. And to be fair, actually, I pay for Now TV as well, which I guess you could say is a streaming service. But a lot of them I split with, like my brother, I split Now TV with because you can have up to 3 users on it. Got BT as well, or Discovery, or what TNT, whatever they called now for the football. So actually quite a few. What about yourself, Josh?
Yeah, Netflix, Amazon, and I'm maybe a little bit naughty with Disney as well, but that's not my subscription. So, yeah, I guess it's just that idea. I think there are apps that they're building now, aren't they, to sort of put them all into one. You can have all your streaming apps on sort of one platform, but I'm still yet to find one that maybe just give me one bulk one. Give me a discount if I just buy 7 of them at once and then put all of them in, and so I don't have to switch between the different platforms. You know, life's about simplicity these days. People pay for simplicity. So
it's difficult to decide what to watch in the evening.
Exactly.
I have so many options and then I'm deciding for 30 minutes and I'm like, oh, it doesn't matter right now. I will just go to bed.
Yes. Yeah.
We need AI. We need an AI tool to just pick what you want for you. That's what I think the next. That's what we should maybe put it into ChatGPT. That's what should I watch tonight? Sam, we were talking earlier about markets and how we have sort of had to sell off after retail sales data, higher for longer sort of narrative, that sort of mix of bad news sort of coming through, and as always a bad week and a couple of bad days, and people are sort of starting to act as if the market will sell to zero, forgetting that we've already had a huge start of the year to the S&P 500. So let's get a little bit of perspective on this, Sam. How are we feeling about markets?
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? You just got to, have a little bit of calm, and it's quite interesting. I've got the chart of the S&P 500 up to my right, which I'll talk about in a moment, and I'm just having a quick look at it. And, from memory, the same people that were ultra long-term bearish over the last 18 months were the people piping up again over the last couple of days. Pullbacks in the markets are healthy. They're needed. Just take a quick look at your chart over the last few years to see how many of them there are, and we've still gone higher. So I think it's important just to calm everyone. We've all been there as investors where the market, for whatever reason, by the way, has a bad day or a bad week, and you end up selling in a bit of a panic, and you look back in a few weeks or months or years later, and your investments and trades have gone up or done exactly what you think. And that can be ultimately very frustrating. And on the flip side, I'm not saying that this is always going to be the case. There's been plenty of times when an individual stock has a bad headline, which sends it lower, and it never does recover. So I do get that as well. But how do you get those really big winners for individual stocks or compound indexes over time? You hold them. It's the only way. So to put things into a bit of perspective, I've used, as I mentioned, the S&P 500. It has an average pullback of, or has 3.2 pullbacks a year average, historically, a pullback being 5% move to the downside from a peak. We're currently just under 5%. I think it's about 4.5 or 4.7% from that high. Also, it is worth mentioning the intra-year decline on average for the S&P 500 is minus 14%. So again, if that was to happen, it's the average. It's not really a reason to panic, and certainly not when we've had such an amazing start to the year, which would have been on course to be one of the best in decades, the way it was going. There is the old saying, we've certainly used it many times on the podcast, that time in the market beats timing the market. I do believe that should be applied here, especially if you're a long-term investor as well. The fundamentals and stage are nicely set for higher equity prices into the back end of the year, I think, and a lot of the reasons, Josh, you did mention there before, but also some of those reasons why we are moving a little bit lower: geopolitical risk, less rate rises, economic numbers as well, but earnings, looks like as long as they're going to be half decent, then we should really be okay. I guess next week and the week after, we can sit here and we can talk about earnings in a little bit more detail and say, well, does that actually change the narrative? But it doesn't really seem to be the case from what we're looking at right now.
Where do you think that people will start buying the dips? Is it going to be like with every small pullback, or they're waiting for some bigger pullback?
Well, I guess actually over the last, you know, what month we're in now, 4, 5, 6, 7 months, it's probably been quite frustrating for dip buyers that wanted a significant one, because, you know, we keep hearing how much cash is on the sidelines, and, you know, people waiting for an opportunity to get in lower than where we're trading, and that dip just didn't really come. So I do wonder whether, you know, the first sign of strength from a move lower is bought in. But, you know, we're below the 50-day moving average. We closed below that a few trading sessions and then ago, and we have since moved a little bit lower. The last time we were below there significantly would have been August last year. We did then briefly in September go back above it, but we actually ended up selling off all the way down to the low that happened in October last year, which was the low before the move we've had now. So I think, you know, if people, rather than not buy the dip, would like to buy if we can move higher, I think a move back above the 50-day moving average might give people a little bit more confidence in saying this move has been exhausted to the downside. The 100-day moving average at 4,933 roughly is one to keep an eye on. For me, the area that I think I would be most attracted to, and I think other traders would be as well, is should we actually get a correction, you know, a 10% move from the peak, which roughly brings us in and around, albeit a little bit lower, roughly brings us around the 2022 high, which we had on one of the first trading days of that year. So if you look at your charts and you go back to that, that would be almost a 10% move from the all-time high. And I think that would be an area where people would eye up. It'd be a great opportunity to get in when, we're at a stage where I think people can foresee for the next sort of few months, years, the direction to be to the upside. We've sort of got over the worst of it, haven't we, over, 2022 and so on. So I think people wanted a dip. I don't think there's a reason to panic. I think if you've got a 10% and earnings are still okay, I think that would be a good opportunity for people to start loading up. And look, history is on our side. We all know that. But I think it was just quite useful to put things into perspective.
I think that catching the bottom is not working and timing the market is not the way. But if you're really planning to dollar cost average on a long-term position, right now it's a good opportunity as well, because you are really getting a good entry point. So I think that this pullback might be beneficial for those who are looking on the long term.
Yeah, no, it is a good point. And I think when we talk about dollar cost averaging, ultimately, does it actually really matter where you buy? Yeah, look, of course, if you can time things perfectly, you get rewarded better. But if you're a long-term investor and you had planned at some point to invest, whether that be monthly or quarterly, ultimately, it's a much of a muchness, I would say. But look, things can change in the markets for sure. I'm sure there will be people out there that are ultimately more bearish than we are. And it'd be interesting to hear from you. Things can, of course, change with earnings being at the sort of front of the page news at the moment, and certainly over the next couple of weeks. So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll be back next week as well. Neja, Josh, thank you, as always.
See you next week.
You have been listening to Digest and Invest by eToro. For more information, use eToro.com. This podcast is for information and education purposes only and should not be taken as investment advice, a personal recommendation, or an offer of or solicitation to buy or sell any financial instruments. This material has been prepared without taking into account any particular recipient's investment objectives or financial situation, and has not been prepared in accordance with the legal and regulatory requirements to promote independent research. Past performance is not an indication of future results.